to another episode of the Newsroom Blog Podcast. I'm Ted Sullivan, Assistant Managing Editor of the Bozeman Daily Chronicle. Today my guest is Gadal Kaiser. Gadal covers Montana State University men's basketball for the Chronicle and contributes to the MSU Bobcats blog. He also covers prep sports, among many other things around town. Gadal's an animal on Twitter, using the username @GadalKaiser. This week, Gadal's entrenched in the coverage and hype surrounding the Cat Grizz basketball game, which is always a fun rival. Gadal, welcome to the show.
Howdy.
Now, before we talk hoops, I just checked out your Twitter account, and you've tweeted more than 25,000 times. What do you love about Twitter so much, and how do you implement Twitter in your coverage?
Well, generally, I use Twitter as a tool along with my stories. What I use Twitter for now, basically, is what we used to do was an in-game blog, and I'd tweet, and I'd try and shoot video or take photos for my post-game blog, and it became a giant, giant hassle. So now, basically, we don't do an in-game blog anymore for MSU sports. We might go back to that. We'll talk about that, I think, over the summer and see if it's something we want to explore doing again. But what I like about Twitter, while I'm out covering an MSU game or even a preps game, is that I can check up on other scores either around the area or around the state. For instance, our prep stuff, we have a special hashtag we use. It's #MTScores, and that's basically you're supposed to do whatever you can to throw up, in particular, final scores of prep games that you know are coming in or prep games that you cover. And what I do with mine is, say I'm at a Bozeman-Belgrade game, which, oddly enough, I'll be at tonight. I might do a little play-by-play as the game's going on, but generally, since... Generally, since I'm on my phone while I'm at a game, tweeting on my phone, I'll just do the quarter scores, you know, end of first quarter, Bozeman 27, Belgrade 7, #MTScores. Just quarterly updates so that the people that follow me, the media around the state, and, you know, our TV guys around here and Coulter can follow where the progress of the game is at. The first time I ever used Twitter for a preps game, I tweeted about 100 times during the game. And I got so many kind of, you're an animal, and how do you keep up with that stuff? And I was like, well, I had my laptop with me. It's easier, obviously, laptop, do it, tweeting, and I found this too, obviously, when I'm in an MSU game. It's easier tweeting out information, when you're on TweetDeck or when you're using, you know, the laptop rather than on the phone.
Now, do you engage fans quite a bit and interact with fans on Twitter as well?
Yes, I do. I'll get... If it's not direct messaging, where I consider direct messaging not necessarily off the record, but private stuff between me and sources between me and sources. So I'll use direct messaging to communicate, you know, recruiting stuff with people or with a couple of sources . But, you know, I interact with people on Twitter. Like, you know, if Jeff Lasky tweets out something and puts my name in it, I'll either retweet it or I will answer back. Or I've had a couple of people who have been at MSU games and they've been tweeting. They say, you know, we see you. What are your thoughts? This is what I think. And I'll either retweet what they think and then follow up, or I'll just answer them saying, yeah, you're right about this, you're right about that. I also use Twitter, obviously, since it's just one name, I use it for a personal account as well. So I guarantee out of, what I think you said 25,000, mm-hmm. I guarantee out of that 25K, maybe 5,000 or so, maybe 7,000 or so is personal stuff between me and friends back home, me and old college friends who are all over, you know, the country, just messing around and talking with, you know, other professional journalists around the nation.
So let's get into basketball. What are the storylines with the Bobcats men's basketball team this year? What have you seen from them? And tell us a little bit about this team.
This team took a long time to find itself this year, and that can be expected when you basically have, I don't want to say nine completely new people, because there were a few, there were a lot of people on the roster last year that are still there, but when you take all, when you have about five or six true freshmen that you're playing on the bench, and all of a sudden they become sophomores, and they have to go into a larger role, you know, one of them has to all of a sudden be getting to the starting lineup and become a starter as a sophomore. And you have five or six other guys who, you know, you recruited this year to come in. I mean, the backup point guard is a true freshman. There were four junior college, there were five junior college guys who were supposed to come. There are four junior college guys, or three junior college guys on the roster now, because one of them had academic issues and is ineligible this semester. Basically, it was a giant melting pot of newness, save for, you know, one person who's been in his role since last season. And even at that, Rod Singleton's only in his second year in the system, because he was a junior college transfer 2 years, or junior college signee, I should say, 2 years ago. It makes for a lot of coach speak and a lot of cliches early on when you're going through the ups and downs of finding each other and finding out what the team can do, mm-hmm. and, you know, all this stuff we like to cynically put in air quotes when coaches say them, when coaches and players, when they say that stuff. It's culminated right now. They started hot in the Big Sky in the Big Sky Conference season, which has been an MO of this team no matter who's on the roster. The last 5-6 years, I think the worst first half record they've had is maybe 4-4, which is 500 basketball, which is decent. It's just generally the second half of the season, which they're getting into, that the team flounders or flops or whatever semi-negative adjective you want to use. They go from being, say, you know, top three in conference at the halfway point to maybe barely getting into the conference tournament. And it's been an MO of this team under Brad Hughes. And so I don't know what's going to happen the rest of this season. History says they were third place at the halfway point, and they're going to end up either barely getting into the playoffs or dropping a couple of spots. So instead of being the number three seed and hosting a first-round playoff game, they'll be the number five seed and have to go somewhere, or the number six seed and have to go somewhere. Theoretically, it may happen. Well, no, and like I said, history says that'll happen. In theory, these players think they have the stuff with everything they've been through. You know, one kid getting academically ineligible. Mm-hmm. Another kid who they signed to play this year isn't even on campus for a variety of reasons having to do with junior college he was at and some transcript issues. So who knows?
So it's a young team trying to find itself, but they've been playing well
yes.
so far.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. It just, this week is going to be the litmus test for them, I think. Obviously, you've got the rivalry game on Saturday, which is always huge, you know, whether it's here or in Dahlberg. And with basketball, they're lucky enough to say, you know, we get two chances at this. But they're also playing Idaho State Thursday. And Idaho State is coming off an upset of the number one team in the conference. And so that's pretty much their primary focus. Has been yesterday, will be today, will be tomorrow. And they won't start thinking about the Grizz until, oh, say, 9:45 at night, Thursday night.
So why don't you set up the Cat-Grizz game for us?
Okay, this year the Cat-Grizz game is very interesting. Right now, as it stands, Montana is number 2 in the standings, and MSU is number 3. And this is the only game for Montana, so they've got all week to prepare for MSU. And again, MSU has 2 games, so they're at a little bit of a disadvantage. It's a very, like I said, it's a very interesting dichotomy, because you've got a team that's, MSU is shorter than Montana on the whole. I mean, Montana's got 7-foot Derek Selvig. MSU's tallest player is 6'9", 6'10", and even at that, Jeff Budnick, whom I love when he's on, plays more of, is 6'10", but he plays more of, or tries to play more of, a big man who can shoot the mid-range outside jumper. His game isn't necessarily down low. So if when he has to guard Selvig, it'll be interesting. Also, Selvig can do what Budnick can do. Selvig can hit threes. I think going into this season, he'd already, even after 3 years, got into the top, maybe top 20 of Montana's three-point shooters, which, obviously, if you have a 7-foot player that can play down low and shoot the three-pointer, that's, as George Costanza would say, that's gold, Jerry. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting. It's always interesting because, obviously, these are rivals, and Montana's been the better team in the rivalry the last few years, and Montana considers themselves in basketball to try and have more of a rivalry with Weber State, which has been the conference's top kingpin, excluding a year or two maybe, but for the last decade, Weber State has been the conference's top kingpin. So, I mean, it is always a rivalry between these two schools. It's just, at this point, MSU is kind of the little brother-ish role, and they're always trying to say, hey, we belong, we belong, we belong.
So what do you think will be the key for the Bobcats this week against Idaho State and the Grizzlies?
Defense. Defense, defense, defense is invariably the key. It's what makes... It's what makes, if you can't get stops, you're not going to win a game. Yes, their shooting has been poor recently in the last couple games. It hasn't been what it was, you know, the first 5 or 6 games of the conference season, which, again, if they're off, it's going to be not great for them. But if they can modify being off with their shooting game by playing defense and find a way to get to the free throw line, then excuse me, then it might be an okay deal for MSU.
For people watching the game, give us something that we should look for that could be a game changer early on. Like, what would be some key indicators to you about how this game is going?
Whoever comes out hot from beyond the arc. If in the first 5 minutes, Selvig and Will Cherry and Kareem Jamar, I believe his name is, if they're hitting mid-range or they're hitting beyond the arc, it might be a long day for MSU. On the flip side, if MSU starts hitting their threes early, It could be the same. I mean, the three-point arc, I believe, will tell the tale of this game, because both teams have guys that can shoot three-pointers, have guys that can get hot from three. Yes, you're going to want to go low again with Selvig, and yes, MSU is going to try to maybe go low with Muhammad Fall, Jordan Alou, Trey Johnson to try and get Selvig in foul trouble. But the three-point line is where it is. We've seen MSU hit 13 three-pointers in a game. We've seen them hit 4. We've seen UM hit 5 three-pointers in a game. We've seen them hit as many as 12, I believe. The three-point line is going to be where the game is won and lost on Saturday, I believe.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you think will win this game and why, if you're comfortable making a prediction?
if I'm comfortable making a prediction, if I'm being totally honest, I think the Grizz will win because their offensive weaponry is a little more consistent than MSU's. Again, we've seen MSU hit 13 three-pointers. They did that a couple games ago. We've also seen them hit as few as four. Mm-hmm. And if their shots aren't on, it seems to affect them on the defensive end. Whereas UM has had a couple bad offensive games, but they've compiled it by only losing by, 5 or 6 points instead of losing by, 10 or 15.
How important is home court in a game like this at the college level for the Bobcats?
It really is. It really is. I mean, it's going to be a lot crazier because in these two rivalry games, Dahlberg almost always is packed with Grizz fans. The last time I went to Dahlberg for the doubleheader over there, there were maybe, for the women's game, there were maybe 50 women's fans. For the men's game, there were maybe 100 MSU fans there for the men's game, which means Dahlberg, which is 7,500-something seats, I believe, was 90% Grizz fans. Here, it's not exactly the opposite. Because the field house is so much bigger and allows for more people, the Montana fans come and, I want to say it's like 80-20 or 70-30 in terms of fan base. It's huge for MSU because most of their fans are everywhere, all over, where obviously the Grizz fans are just packed kind of behind their bench and scattered around a little bit more. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger atmosphere, and because there's more people, it makes for a much more tense environment, more noise, etc., etc. It can be really, really good for the Bobcats to be here, to have the first one at Brick because of that fact, because they don't have we lost a week ago to them. We've got to get fan support. This can be the, let's come out and let us set the tone with our fan support and with our ability, and then let us take it to them and see how they respond.
Good. Good all. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.